perfect world, political differences would be just that, political differences. However, today's political environment is much more polarized than it was 10, 15 years ago. Human rights and civil rights are at the forefront of our conversations. We have when we talk about our elections, particularly the presidential election coming up in November. In an age of social media and easily accessible digital platforms, voicing our opinions now is easier than it's ever been. We're at an unprecedented point in history where young adults have some of the most influence in politics we've ever had with these new digital platforms. But are we making good use of it? Today, we'll be talking with two politically involved young adults who will be first-time voters this fall, Eduardo Rondon and Kamal Sodhi. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
My name is Eduardo Rondon. I was born in Venezuela and I moved here in 2014. I currently participate with the Lincoln Project, and I also write articles to the Gainesville Sun about extremism in politics and voter participation.
Hi, my name is Kamal Sodhi. I'm from Gainesville, Florida, and I've been a political advocate for some time now. I helped co-found the National Organization for Women Club and was a president of the High School Democrats of America Club at Eastside High School. I've also participated in an internship with Gainesville City Commissioner Adrian Yang Santos, and I'm interested in changing the long-standing narratives concerning politics today, and I hope to continue my passion for political engagement at the University of Florida.
So first of all, I want to ask you, Kamal, about your experience with running a political organization on campus. How do you interpret the role of political clubs on campus, no matter which party they're affiliated with?
I think that political clubs and extensions of political organizations on college campuses and in high schools are extremely important. They provide an outlet for young people to get involved more in politics and get more involved in many of the laws and policies that'll change their futures and are currently changing their lives as well. I think it's important that political clubs, no matter what party they're affiliated with, are as open and inclusive as possible. With the National Organization for Women Club at our school, we focused a lot on intersectional feminism, which is essentially ensuring that people of all color, of all genders, of any political background are as welcomed as possible to the narratives concerning feminism. I think that's pretty important for political clubs. To ensure that they are as welcoming despite previous political backgrounds of their participants.
And have you ever experienced pushback from faculty or students who didn't agree with your ideas or even the concept of politics on campus?
Faculty, not so much. Nothing that can come to mind. There were a few students and a few people who didn't see the relevance of political clubs in high school or politics in general at this young of an age, but there wasn't really any faculty that were against any of it.
So Eduardo, you're mainly involved in off-campus political activities like the Lincoln Project and writing for the Gainesville Sun. In your own experience, how would you compare being politically involved at school with being politically involved outside of school?
I think, at least personally, it's been much easier to be involved with politics outside of school with the Gainesville Sun and through the Lincoln Project than it would have been with the school, because I felt like my school was, at least the students were extremely liberal, and there were not really any clubs or organizations for Republicans or conservatives, like Young Republicans, and there also didn't seem to be a desire to start one, either because some people thought it would create pushback or there just wasn't enough interest. And I had many times that I received pushback from other people at school because of my beliefs or that they were misinterpreted. So outside of school, I was able to find more people and more organizations that matched my beliefs, but also to find a broader group of people to debate with about politics from different sides of the aisle. So I was able to broaden my perspectives through speaking to people that believe different things than I do and including some of their beliefs into my own set of beliefs and values, as well as finding people that I thought agreed with me. And I think that it was good to find that healthy balance of knowing people that could teach you both things. One, always having someone you can agree with, but always having someone that can correct you or that can teach you new things about politics from the way they see it.
I actually read your article from the Gainesville Sun this morning and I loved it. It was so beautifully written. Do you want to talk about it a little bit, your recent one?
Sure. Yes, I wrote an article for the Sun, which is going to be published in print this Sunday. And it's just my perspective as a Republican who is disenchanted with the Trump administration and with politics in general within the GOP over the last 4 years, and kind of this behavior of doing everything that Trump says, doing everything that you think would please the Oval Office currently, and how unhealthy it has become, and how it mirrors autocracy and extremism that is not what the Republican Party intended either when Lincoln reformed it or during the Reagan Revolution. It is a completely different party that's focused on exploiting this hate and resentment that was slightly forgotten, and it's what currently stands as the base for Trump. And now it's being revived, and to some extent that is being enjoyed by the party as new popularity. And they are using that to their advantage within many elections in rural areas, but to their disadvantage nationally, creating a lot more controversy for the party and a completely new set of ideas that are not healthy in a democracy.
So can you tell our audience a little bit about the Lincoln Project for those who might not be familiar?
Yes, the Lincoln Project was, or is, a PAC, or a political action committee, and it was formed at the end of last year by Kellyanne Conway's husband, George Conway, and other Republicans that had left the party or were in the party but unhappy with the Trump administration. And the goal of the project is to prevent Trump's reelection and defeat his main supporters, such as Mitch McConnell. And in April of 2020, we actually released an op-ed, I believe in the Washington Post, that was endorsing Democratic nominee Joe Biden.
So I wanted to talk about the stigma surrounding young adults and voting. The 2018 midterm election, which was widely recognized for its high voter turnout according to the U.S. Census, still only saw about 36% of eligible voters aged 18 to 29 vote. As young adults and students, what do you think the major reason is behind young adults not voting, and how can we change this?
I think that one of the main reasons why young adults and people in general don't really vote is because they think that their vote doesn't matter. A lot of people are really disillusioned by many of the events that have been happening these past few years, and they feel like voting isn't necessarily going to make a difference for their lives or for the lives of the people that they love. Another reason, I think, is because politics sort of has this narrative as being for the elderly, and, you know, people think, oh, it's for only old people, and, you know, they don't really recognize that many of the policies and laws that are currently being enacted by Congress directly affect us and are going to directly affect our future.
I think that it's not, like, even like how Kamal said, it's not a crystal clear answer, but it's so many factors that kind of add up to that low turnout within young adults, even though they're extremely active in the world of politics, whether that's on Republicans or Democrats. I think one of the biggest issues is with college students. Many of them have difficulties transferring their voter registration to the place they go to college in if they go out of state, traveling to their hometown, or with mail-in ballots, and the controversy that they create, as we have seen in this election with unfounded accusations of them being fraud. So some people are scared to use it or scared that it won't get home in time. And I think that, at least personally, the biggest issue is the partiality that many of us as young voters have that creates this disenchantment towards like a party establishment. And as I've seen with many people that I know, where they believe that if their candidate of choice from the primary is not elected to represent the party in the main election, they just won't vote at all because they don't feel like their vote will matter or that their vote will be good because it's not towards their candidate of choice, that it therefore becomes bad. And I think that's an unhealthy use of the privilege of voting and of democracy to just throw away your vote because you don't feel like the candidate that's chosen is completely with your beliefs. But I think it's important to still vote and to still use that right, and many young voters are currently throwing that away.
Absolutely. I'm actually going to an out-of-state college next year, and I had to sign up for a mail-in ballot. And I walked in thinking it was going to be such a huge headache, and it was honestly one of the easiest things I've ever done. So if mail-in ballots are stressing any of our listeners out, I promise it's quick. I think it only took me 3 steps, really, and I think it's so important that we vote in this upcoming election. And something interesting about the two of you is that you're both affiliated with different political parties, yet you agree on one major thing: this upcoming election. We cannot re-elect Donald Trump. What's your main reasoning behind this, and do you feel that other members of your party would agree with you?
One of my main reasonings behind not re-electing Donald Trump is I personally think that he is quite a bit of a threat to democracy. There's a whole host of things that he's done these past few years, whether it be unfounded claims of voter fraud or sending troops into Portland, or plenty of other things. But I think it all kind of sums up to the fact that he doesn't seem to recognize or respect the longstanding laws and practices that ensure the United States remains a democracy. He employs tactics and methods that are similar to those used by dictators around the world, and he finds ways somehow to restrict the freedoms and create this sense of disillusionment for the people of the United States.
My major reasoning for not wanting to re-elect Donald Trump is that, like I said in the article, that the United States today is the least united it's been in generations, and even the Republican Party is, which, if there is one good thing that a lot of people can agree on with the party, is that it's always been united and very uniform on its beliefs and on its values, and this blind following by politicians and by his base just continue to divide the nation, and they push just hate and corruption within government that opposes what was created by founders and what we believe to be checks and balances, which is one of the best parts of a democracy in the U.S. And if I had to just summarize why I wouldn't vote for him, is that the U.S. was founded on we the people and not some of the people. And if you don't believe that a president or a candidate can offer everyone in the country, or most people, the ability to be free, the ability to express themselves, the ability to do whatever they can best, then it is not worth electing that person. And I do feel that, like, other members of the party would agree with me, just not the majority, and that's a big concern, and also the reason I wrote my latest article for The Sun.
So it's interesting you brought up the word division, because I've recently seen, you know, Kanye West is coming into the election now, or is trying to, and a lot of people are talking about how he's going to split the vote, and I just want to hear about both of your opinions on this.
I think that Kanye West coming in, or people who say they're going to vote for the Green Party, or whatever party, whatever other candidate decides to run, it is a way to split the vote, and it's a way for people to take away votes from the Democratic nominee Joe Biden, and it may be a way for Donald Trump to win this election again. And I think that one of the main reasons why people don't want to vote for Joe Biden or decide to vote for Kanye West or another person is because they may not agree with the ideals of Joe Biden. They may not like him as a person. They may have problems with some of the policies he's done in the past. He's had a pretty long-standing Democratic career in politics, and that's completely understandable. But, you know, it's not about Joe Biden's agenda so much. Struggling with the right words for this, but it's more about settling for Joe Biden over another candidate that may end up stealing votes from him and helping to re-elect Donald Trump. Personally, I don't think that Joe Biden is the best candidate, but if it gets Donald Trump out of the office, I am willing to vote for him, of course.
I agree with Kamala in that you can't always see it as, is this person my best option? Is this person the one that I would completely match with politically? But rather, sometimes it also becomes, how do we push out something that is degrading, that is eroding democracy in America? And when it becomes a conversation, it shouldn't be something you think about twice. It shouldn't be where you prioritize your personal beliefs, or at least where you feel like you have the privilege to prioritize those beliefs, instead of making the right choice, which is not re-electing an agenda that is continually destroying the country. And I feel like a third party or a third option is essential to America in the next 50 years, at least, that something comes in that can replace always having to go up party lines, always having to choose one party or the other, or the extremes of one or the other. So I feel like it is essential that eventually a party like that would come in, but this is not the moment for that, because there's not a candidate strong enough to produce that. And so I think that the idea of Kanye West, or of people voting for the Green Party or the Libertarians, or just random parties that's always been there but have no importance, is dangerous more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. I remember that Trump was initially a joke. I guess a lot of people voted for Trump as an ongoing joke. And, you know, when Kanye West announced, even before we were in high school, that he was going to run for president for 2020, and it was like, Kanye West, 2020, and that was like the big thing, you know, we took it as a joke. And I think it's so important in this election that we take it seriously this time, because last time there was a lot of joking going around, and I think it created such a messy situation. So I think it's so important for listeners to know that this election, we have to take it seriously. Any election needs to be taken seriously, but especially this one. So this next question I wanted to ask, not only because we have middle-aged adults turning into this podcast and taking note of younger perspectives, but also because I want our young adult and teenage audiences to think about what their answer to this question would be. As teenagers, what are the most important issues to you when you imagine your ideal candidate, and how do you think that we can convince people in power to care about these issues?
For me, I think one of the biggest issues in politics today, that's pretty personal to me, is climate change. I think that climate change is one of the biggest problems concerning our entire world right now. And I think that when I imagine my ideal candidate, I see someone who's extremely strong and ensuring that we take steps to reduce the effects of climate change. We take steps to be more globally involved in the fight against climate change and global warming. I also, an important issue to me is racial justice and the current, you know, someone who doesn't send federal troops into Portland or other places and cities around the world and, you know, kind of restrict the freedoms of peaceful protesters, but rather someone who actually looks at the root causes of racism in America and tries to address those. I think one of the ways for us to convince people in power to care about these issues is in the future, perhaps, not in this election, but in the future, perhaps voting someone in, voting people in that are a bit younger in our Congress, in perhaps even as president, someone who is a bit younger and kind of understands some of the problems that people that are young think are extremely important to them.
I think, personally, share that belief with Kamal that climate change is the key issue. It shouldn't only be for our generation and for people our age, but for everyone. And I think that part of that has to be both in convincing people in power and also older voters, is how we talk about it and making it relatable, not only for us, but making it relatable for everyone so that it doesn't feel politicized, just like it has been for the last couple of years and like the pandemic has been politicized, but making it so that we make sure that everyone understands that it is an issue that affects everyone, that it affects low-income communities in Little Haiti and South Florida, but also that it affects the rural farmers in Georgia who are going to have a decrease in crop growth because of extended droughts or extended winters. And I also find it important that we go back to more moderate candidates than what has been popping up as more extremism, both in the Democrat Party and in the Republican Party. And I feel like it is important that we remember that politicians have to value democracy over autocracy, and that we have politicians who believe in the power the U.S. has within the continent and abroad. And I think we can convince politicians to care about these issues by voting people in that we present them, just the same way that people were not voting for alt-right candidates across the country until Trump entered the political arena. So it showed that a candidate can set a stream, just one candidate can set a stream going of specific ideologies when they're elected. And if we're able to push for the ideologies we want with one candidate, we can create a national wave that reflects that.
I guess if I had advice for the audiences, it would be, I think mine would be, just because you can't vote doesn't mean you don't have a voice. I think as youth, you know, you have to be able to have, you know, educated conversations with your parents. I know I used to, I still talk with my parents about, you know, everything going on in politics. I remember my parents would let me stay up late to watch the elections as they went on. And I remember, you know, my dad took me out of school to watch Barack Obama's inauguration when I was in like kindergarten. So like, I think it's just so important to stay involved and communicate, because even for our middle school and high school audiences that still can't vote, you still have a voice and you can use it. I know people were making petitions to try to get at least 1/4 of your voices heard. And it's so important to just, you know, stay involved. Even though you're young, you still have a voice and you can still use it. I found this beautiful quote online and I really wanted to share it. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on this, if it makes you think of anything or anything you'd want to tell our listeners. I'll just say it. And then it's from Ronald Reagan, and it's, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day, we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States, where men were free."
I think that's an incredible quote. It's really important because it does showcase how important it is for people to fight for their freedom, especially people of any age, people of any gender, people of any race or any background. It's important that we, the people of the United States, fight for the freedoms that we founded this country on. And whether it be through peaceful protests or pre-registering to vote or voting your first election, these are all extensions for us to ensure that our voices are heard and that the ideals that make our own moral compass are represented in the people that we vote into our Congress and the people that we vote into the presidency.
I definitely agree with Kamal and with former President Reagan on that quote, that it is important that we value freedom when we have it and that we fight for it, so we don't have to tell it. And coming from Venezuela and having seen my freedom slowly being eaten away to the point where we had to leave the country because we felt like there was no other way out, there was no other solution, and there still hasn't been, even 7 years after we left the country. And you don't want to have to get to a point where you're telling all your friends from other countries or family members that were born after you about how different the world was when there was freedom, or when I have my parents or my grandparents tell me about how great Venezuela was when we were leading oil exporters and we were leading South America in our great economy. So it is important that we fight for our freedoms so that we deserve it. And to kind of connect to Reagan's quote, one of the quotes I quote in my article was from Lincoln, and I make it in reference to saying that the Republican Party has to rebirth to create progress and to maintain freedom in the country, because Lincoln once said that those who deny freedom don't deserve it for themselves. And so if we deny freedom or we deny ourselves to fight for it, we cannot complain later about not having it.
And as a response to voter apathy, I just want to say, for people who don't vote and then complain about what happens in the end, everyone has the right to take part in the government directly or through freely chosen representatives. So make sure you guys are out there voting. And Kamal, you mentioned your thoughts on freedom, which are very much involved with the concept of freedom of speech. How important is it for young adults to have platforms like this to talk about politics?
I think it's extremely important for young people to have platforms like podcasts and social media to be able to discuss and learn more about different information and different political beliefs. I think that one of the great things about having the recent technological advancement within the past decade is that we are so much more connected online. And while that comes with many disadvantages as well, I think it's important that we navigate our way through, you know, these social media platforms and focus on, you know, the truthful information that is posted on these different media outlets. There's oftentimes a lot of false information that flies around them, but I think that it's important for people to understand that there's both bad and good concerning freedom of speech on these different media outlets.
And Eduardo, can you explain a little bit about how your background as an immigrant shaped your ideas regarding politics?
Yes, I think that my background as an immigrant shaped politics in two different ways. One of them that it maintained this set of ideas that are more conservative. Being an immigrant and experiencing some of the things that you have to go through in this country once you have just moved here, and being in people's shoes that I hadn't been before because I was able to live a very privileged life in Venezuela, helped me adopt different ideas that I didn't have in my set of beliefs before, and understand other people differently and why they support the things they do. But also as an immigrant, at least coming from Venezuela, I was able to understand the dangers of extremist governments, the dangers of whether it's socialism or fascism, because I saw it. And even though most of my friends probably wouldn't listen to me when I tell them, I often try to warn them, like, hey, you know, that sounds oddly familiar. That resonates to me in a bad way. And I'll think, you know, this person doesn't give me a good vibe because they remind me of things that I've heard before by the current government in Venezuela. So I think it shaped my political views in that I was better understanding of other people's situations and beliefs, but also in fortifying mine having left and trying to do as much as I could to make sure that other people wouldn't fall into traps or into situations like the one that I saw many family members and friends in Venezuela fall through during multiple elections over the last 20 years.
So, Eduardo, I think it's really interesting that you're a Republican, but not a Trump supporter. Has that affected you personally or in your social life? Have you found that, you know, it's been difficult to be a Republican that's not a Trump supporter?
Not really. At least within the social circle that I'm in, I've found it okay to within Republicans to not support Trump, and sometimes I can get them to agree on some of the stuff that I disagree with, and sometimes I can't. And usually it's for them, it becomes a lot of the people that I know that are Republicans, it becomes of like, I don't want to elect a Democrat, but I don't like Trump. So the same way that for many Democrats the lesser of both evils is Biden, for many of them the lesser of both evils is Trump. Personally, I don't share that view, but I found many of them to disagree with many of the things. And for a lot of them, and even for me, what tipped the balance and agreeing with him or not was how he has responded to the pandemic. But personally, I think at least because of the demographics of where I live, and it's been harder to be a Republican as a whole, whether you support him or not, than to be a Republican that doesn't agree with him. Because people that are outside of the GOP will automatically classify you as a Trump supporter as soon as you utter the words, I am a conservative or I am a Republican.
Thank you so much. So this question is for both of you. How important are local politics in comparison to national politics? Do you think local elections are just as important, more important, or less important?
I think local elections are probably just as important as national and state elections. Most of the effects of the policies and laws that we feel are from local laws. And I think it's important that we, as young people and just people in general, should be well aware of the people that they're voting onto the school board, the people that they're voting as mayor or city commissioner, and recognize that those who we vote into office are representatives for us and extensions of our political beliefs as well. So ensuring that we vote in local elections is extremely important, I think.
I definitely agree with Kamal in that it is important to, or a lot more important at least than how we see it today, to vote in local elections. And people always complain, oh, look at the signs of the local city commissioner person or the sheriff, and they're everywhere. And just how they're everywhere is how we should be talking about it more often than we do. For example, here in Gainesville, we had a vote where they removed in a 3-2 decision, the New York Times subscription for free for all the schools in the county. And if we had picked different people for the school board, maybe that decision would have happened. So there are decisions that we make that affect us directly, even though sometimes we don't see it. And a lot of that is that around 75% of incumbents get reelected. And you would say, oh, that's good. You know, they get to keep their jobs because they're doing a good job. Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's just that people don't care enough to look. They just say, hey, that's the same sheriff that was there last time. That's the same city commissioner. I don't know them, and I know even less about the people that are running against them. So I'm just going to vote for them again. And that's a problem, because you don't know who you're voting for, and you don't even know if the person that was running against them was a better option.
Those are both really great answers. So Kamal, in the National Organization for Women, which you were involved in at your school, do you find that you had similar conversations to the ones you had in the High School Democrats of America? What's different?
I think we did have a lot of similar conversations. We did have, when we were speaking in the High School Democrats of America Club, we would talk a lot about the things that Donald Trump would attempt to do, or that states were attempting to do, such as restricting abortion. And so we would kind of get into that area as well. And then in the National Organization for Women, we had the similar conversations about restricted access to birth control, or, you know, abortion, or just overall sort of sexism within workplace culture, within politics. And so we would kind of delve into that and have similar conversations concerning those areas.
Actually, this question might be for both of you, but I went to a school that didn't have clubs like High School Democrats of America. And when I did go to one, I didn't really participate in that club because I wasn't very open with sharing my political views at the time. So can you guys walk the audience through what it's like to be a part of a club like that? Like, what's a day in, like, what would a club meeting be like?
So usually we would start off by, we would wait a little bit because people were, you know, getting their food and stuff like that from the cafeteria and getting themselves settled. And then we would start it by, we would usually had a PowerPoint presentation. We would introduce the topic, and we usually posted the topic beforehand on the Facebook group. And then we would start delving into the overall conversation. We would provide a little bit of information and then have a few discussion questions where people can, you know, share their political beliefs or share their, you know, ideas on whatever concept we were talking about. And it would, we would try to make sure that everything was pretty civilized.
So we have, this is for both of you, we have the older people who don't really listen to us truly. What do you guys think about that? Like, older people not really thinking that we're using our voices appropriately?
I think that there may be a few people, a few older people that think that young people don't have a role or shouldn't be involved in politics at all, that we're immature, that we don't know what we're talking about. And I just think that those claims are absolutely wrong. Most of the policies that'll go into effect will affect us directly, especially local policies. And, you know, these are our futures that we're talking about. You know, in a few years, we're going to be, we'll have jobs, we'll be starting families, we'll be doing all of this stuff. And many of the representatives in politics today aren't really representative of us as a demographic, I believe.
I think that a lot of the one of the reasons that often people that are older than us don't see any importance in us or in the young vote, number one is what we were talking about earlier, the lower turnout. So as soon as we can start to have a better turnout and we can show the rest of the demographics and older people that we do turn out to vote, that we do have an effect, they will start listening to us more, both from the politicians listening to us more side, but also other people that are in our area or that are just looking for someone to vote, because they will know that we truly have an effect in politics and they will see that we do have a voice. And I will also kind of use this to highlight that we as young people sometimes should listen more to older voters than we do. Not necessarily because they're always right, because a lot of them are very out of touch with the current state of the country or the current state of many issues, but sometimes in their perspective or their ideas, I know that sometimes in talking to grandparents, so friends of mine that came from Cuba and their experience coming here in a little boat for 3 days because they had to escape an autocratic government, or friends that escaped, that had family escape from the Soviet Union, or even my grandparents, of how life was before in Venezuela, helps you understand how dangerous things are when democracy is put on a thin line where we have the power to choose if it survives or if it goes away. So I think it's important just as much that they listen to us as it is that sometimes we listen to them.
So what's the easiest way for young people to get involved in politics?
I think one of the best ways is to reach out to political organization or clubs at your school. If you don't have any, maybe think of starting one up on your own. And if you're a bit unsure, I'm sure that there's probably local chapters, you know, there's probably Young Democrats chapter at your town, or, you know, a different feminist organization in your town that'll probably help you. Another way is just to simply take, you know, 20 minutes out of the day and read up on the news. It's kind of hard for us because we don't have, you know, like news subscriptions, but if you're, you know, if you have the ability to pay for one, I think it's a great investment. And just reading up on the news is a great way for you to shape your own political beliefs, to look at different perspectives. They have editorials and news organizations that provide, you know, differing perspectives and stuff like that. I also think that podcasts like this one are a great way for people to, you know, get involved more in politics. And then finally, I'd say if you're really interested, please make sure to pre-register to vote at a young age, and, you know, you'll kind of be set.
Definitely get involved with political organizations, and if there are none in the school that you'd want to join, even if there is a Young Democrats, join the Young Democrats if you're a conservative. Listen to the people on the other side of the aisle. Listen to what they have to say, to what they believe, to why they're pushing for a certain piece of legislation that might be the talk of the town in DC at that moment. Read the news, and don't just watch MSNBC or CNN. Watch Fox News. I know it might get annoying after 10 minutes of half of their anchors praising Trump, but there's a lot of important information that comes out of there. Last weekend, George Wallace did a great interview on Trump where he just one after the other continually showed different proofs to question Trump on his performance on coronavirus and other current issues. And I think it's one of the best interviews that has been done on Trump, and one of the ones where he was put on the spot the most. And unless you would have watched, you know, Fox News on that Sunday afternoon, you wouldn't have been able to see it. So read up and investigate, and don't make up your mind after just reading one source. Read different sources. Try to read international sources about politics that might mirror what's happening here in a different country, if you're able to find a translated version, because I also think it's important to see how politics here mirrors what has happened or what is currently happening in other parts of the world and how they see it.
Exactly, Eduardo, that's absolutely right. I'm from two Trinidadian parents, and listening to my cousins from Trinidad talk about what's going on in America, it's a completely different viewpoint than what we're used to seeing. So I definitely do recommend, you know, doing research. And if you can read an article on an international level, I would definitely do it, because it's just so amazing what they think of us and, you know, their viewpoints and how we affect other countries. Finally, and we do this on most of our episodes, if you have a recommendation for our listeners for maybe a book, TV show, movie, an article, anything that can inspire those who listen to this episode to make a difference in their life or challenge their perspective, feel free to share.
I have a book recommendation. It's The Power by Naomi Alderman. I don't want to spoil it, but it's really good. I consider it like a feminist book. It shows this world where, I'll give a summary, but it shows this world where women have like electrical abilities, and they kind of use that in a way that shifts the narrative concerning sexism and gender identities in the world within the book. And it's really interesting because it showcases the importance of the balance of power and the balance of equality.
For me, if I would recommend any movies, I would recommend All the President's Men, which is about the Watergate scandal, from the point of view of the reporters who found the story, got it leaked, and eventually published it on the Washington Post. The other one would be Miss Sloan, which is about a lobbyist who, it's fictional, but it's still really good, and it shows just how nasty politics is, and as she fights against the gun lobby, and how that fight goes both for the people that she's working with, but also for her personally, and the attacks that go on her. And it helps you understand why sometimes, you know, we say, oh, this politician didn't do anything, this politician didn't do anything. And it shows how much scrutiny they go under within that we never find out about, and blackmailing, and just how crazy it can be. And two books that I would recommend, one would be Animal Farm, which I know is pretty basic. Most people have probably read it in middle school. And if you have, I would recommend that you read it again, because it's a really important book in highlighting the problem with extremist governments, whether it's on the left or on the right. It shows how dangerous it can become and how it eats what it comes across without necessarily letting you know until it's too late.
So that's all the time we have. I just want to thank both Eduardo and Kamal for coming on today. I know it's hard for some people, including myself, to talk about political views. So thank you guys so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to wrap it up. In a perfect world, political differences would be just that, political differences. Remember to register to vote and request a mail-in ballot, especially if you won't be in town on election day. If you're 16 or 17, many states allow you to pre-register to vote. Florida, if you guys live in Florida, we're one of them. So visit vote.org to find out more. We'll also put a link in this episode's description. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you next time.